Thanks for joining us at the Montrose Church Podcast. For more information, please visit us at montrosechurch.org. Have a great day.
Thank you, Gabby. All right, well, we have the three of us teaching today. We are doing a thing, kind of talk to you guys as you're like, you know, moving through the ranks of school and taking a break in the summer, but really it's for everyone. So we didn't have a series today, so we got together and we were like, what should we talk about? And we decided we would talk about Jesus at 12. When I was around that age, I went on a field trip to the Griffith Observatory, say that at all. My mom was a chaperone, and like when I was a kid, it wasn't a big deal. I was a super nerd. I loved science, so my mom being a chaperone was not a problem because nobody cared or like respected me anyway, so it was no big deal in my social standing to have my mom there. But if you've ever been to the Griffith Observatory, there's this like pit thing when you first come in, and there's this big pendulum and it swings back and forth and it shows the rotation of the earth, and it's in French, and you know, you guys in junior high, and you know I'm fluent in French, so it's called the Foucault pendulum, and that's not how you say it. I don't know how you say it, but it's really cool, and it just like swings back and forth, and there's like all these pegs set up, and it knocks a peg down every hour or so, and I was just staring at it waiting. Because it would, like, go and kind of get near one and then, like, back and then, like, kind of. And I was like, I just want to see it knock down the peg. I just want to see that. And it didn't work, so we had to go, like, do other things. So we went and we saw the rest of the observatory and all this stuff. And then we came back through that room on the way out, and I was like, awesome, I get to see it. So I planted myself there with all my classmates, and we were just watching. We were like, go, go. Oh. And like, we're just, you know, very excited. And I just stared at it forever. And at some point, I, like, looked up, and, like, I thought that the kids next to me were my classmates. And, like, I was vaguely aware that, like, kids were leaving. But at some point, I looked up
and, like, nobody was in that room. It was just me and the pendulum. And it still hadn't knocked over the peg. And I was like, oh, no.
And my mom, who was a chaperone, was having an entirely different experience on the bus, where they had walked all of the kids from Monta Vista back. They had all been seated, and the buses had started pulling out when she was like, oh my son, where is my son? And just like, open this bus, and like screaming, and my mom is Italian, so she was screaming, and like just, you know, tearing through the observatory until she saw me looking like, I don't know what happened next. I'm sure it was Italian and, you know, hands and stuff, but I ended up back on the bus, and I am here. It's great. And that's kind of where we find ourselves in this passage, right? It's Jesus and his family go on this vacation to Jerusalem, and it's kind of the worst vacation ever. And normally I would read this off the screen, but I don't have one, and I have to use the Bible in print, and it's very small, and I'm now old enough that it's hard to read. So bear with me as I read the passage. Sure. I still have to read it in print. All right. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. But they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends, my mom and the bus. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. They were not Italian. His mother said to him, son, Why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you. Why were you searching for me? He asked. Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So when I was a teenager and I first read this passage, because that's kind of when I started reading the Bible, I was like, that's so dumb. How did his parents lose him? Like, you know, because I was a teenager, I knew everything, right? And especially about parenting. I knew everything about parenting and everything my parents were doing wrong. And I was like, that's so dumb. They're so dumb. And now, like, that I have kids, I get it. And now that I'm married, especially, like, you are at a big family thing, and you think that your kids are with, you know, a relative. And that's exactly what happened here. You can just picture the conversation. You know, Mary's like, hey, Joseph, have you seen Jesus? He's like, nah, I'm sure he's with your sister. Don't worry about it, right? And then they're coming back after not finding Jesus, and you can imagine that conversation. With my sister, huh? Think, and like 3 days until they find him. How many times are they talking about how dumb they were? And like, I get it. Like, I was a helicopter parent for a really long time, and like, I would be in the sandbox with my kids, like, because they would eat the sandbox, and at some point, like, we were able to ease off, and now we can just like watch them, you know, fighting each other and eating the sandbox. And it is different, though, because we can trust that they go with their relatives and with each other, and they're not going to kill each other. But Jesus is, like, he gets lost. They lose him. And that has a different context for them back then, and it's a different context for us right now. And for my wife and I, like, when I think about, like, losing one of my kids, I'm not really worried that we're going to, like lose track of them, because I kind of know where they are. And like, now that we have, you know, GPS on their phone and they have a phone with them all the time, like, I am tracking them. I know where they are all the time. Now I'm kind of worried that they're going to get lost, not in La Crescenta, but on the internet somewhere, right? Now I'm worried, not that they're going to put, you know, wood chips in their mouth, but like poison into their brain and get really lost. And that's what Colton's going to come talk to you guys about, is getting lost.
Thanks, John. So good, dude. I'm glad your mom found you too, dude. I'm really happy about that.
It would have been a very different story.
That's right. So continuing, and yes, I'd love to talk a little bit about lostness, and specifically for our graduates as you jump into a new season of life. Some of you are going to college. Some of you are going to the military. Some of you are jumping right into the job force. But here's what I know, is that you'll probably feel lost at some point. It's part of growing up, and you'll feel physically lost, maybe on campus, as you're trying to find your classes or trying to find the right dining hall or maybe the dorm at night. You will probably get lost a little bit. But you also might feel lost in your heart, in your mind, in your emotions at times as you jump into this next phase, as you jump into college. And that's, again, just part of the journey. Some of you will feel secure in your major and what you have chosen, and some of you won't, and you will probably change your major 3 to 4 times, which is the average for college students. I don't know if you knew that, but 3 to 4 times changing the major, right? Figuring that out. Some of you will make friends easy, and some of you won't. And some of you are going to miss home. And I know some of you are like, I will never miss home. I'm out of here. See your parents, and then give it a couple months, and you'll be calling mom and dad. Hey, can you guys come visit me? I miss you. Maybe. You might feel some lostness as you entered this new season. And all of us, church, maybe you are feeling a little bit lost today. Lost in your occupation, lost in your home life, lost because the life that you wanted to live and you planned for isn't what's happening in your journey. You feel lost, but you don't feel lost in the Father's house. You feel lost maybe in the distant country. The distant country is that place where the prodigal son goes in Luke 15, if you remember that story. This place that promises so much to fulfill you and give you all the purpose, and it's a place that leaves us bankrupt and broken and alone. And maybe in some capacity, church, this morning, that's you. You're struggling with lostness. Lostness is unavoidable in our lives. And not only as individuals can we struggle with lostness, but also our culture is lost. People are broken. Churches are declining in the U.S. rapidly, and COVID accelerated all of this. 35% of the 100% of Christians who regularly attended church before COVID don't now. They're gone, and we feel that. We miss them. Young people are leaving the faith in droves. Maybe you've heard some of these numbers. 6 out of 10 high schoolers who are consistently walking with Jesus will walk away from their faith entirely after high school graduation. Heartbreaking. We're trying to destroy those statistics. And there's so many more statistics about how the church is hurting. And the bottom line is our world, our culture is lost. We are lost. We now follow and believe the gospels of materialism, of security, of sexuality, of wealth. We believe these kind of gospels over the gospel of Jesus. And the problem is they're not actually gospels. They're not good news. They're things just like the distant land that promised so much and will leave us bankrupt and broken and hurting. So what do we do? Because we're going to get lost in some capacity. What do we do? We do what Jesus did when he was 12 years old, which we'll get back to in a minute here. Here's Candace.
Thank you, Colton. Those were some important truths that we need to hear today. So there's two different things that really terrify me as being a parent to young children. And the first one is crowded parking lots. The second one is crowded public places. And our oldest, Seamus, who's here in this service with us, he was a runner. He could run so fast from the moment he could walk. I think he preferred to run. And I'll never forget the day I took him shopping at a store in Sierra Madre for the first time without a stroller that had him strapped in. He was running in the parking lot. I had to constantly remind him to stop running, to hold my hand. He was running through the store. At first, it was really cute because he stayed close and he was getting between the clothing racks and the clothes, and he would peek out and he would say hello to me. He did that quite a few times. I kept reminding him, that's fine. Stay close, though. Stay close, buddy. And then he ran a little bit further, came back, asked for a snack. I had some goldfish in my purse. I gave him the goldfish. And then he kind of took off, but I could still see him. He was near me. He then took to going under the retail racks, completely under, hiding in the middle, which from a distance you can't really see that well, but from far away you could see some feet. So I was sort of keeping track, but also distracted because I was there for a reason. I forget the clothing item I needed. And then I realized I have lost track of him, completely lost track of him. My heart starts racing up into my throat. I start sweating because that's what I do when I'm super worried or anxious. And I'm running out of breath because I'm searching for him for like 3 to 5 minutes. And then finally, I see his little sandals under some clothes, under a rack, and I get down on his level, open the clothes, and there he is, just so sweetly eating his goldfish. But he was all the way back in the back of the store. And I was so relieved that I found him, and I tried to calm myself down before I said, "Hey, buddy, you can't get that far away from mom in the store, okay?" Losing your children is no fun at all, and I'm really thankful that day Seamus is here with us today, and we found him. It was a happy ending. But parents, I have some questions for you today, and the big one is, are you looking for your children? And this is sort of a metaphorical question, not a question like if they're lost, like in a department store like I was with my child, but you might want to take some of these questions home with you and reflect on them in a deeper way. Do you notice what they're having a hard time with? Do you celebrate and help them lean into what they're passionate about, what they excel in? Do they have enough downtime to rest and renew their mind, body, soul, and spirit? Are you giving them gentle guidance and redirection? Are they asking you to go places or do things because of their passions? Think about those things. And a word of encouragement as you're leaning into those passions, the gifts and talents of your children. If this makes you uncomfortable as a parent, I think you're doing it right. Because that's where I've noticed the Holy Spirit and the Lord leading me is when I'm out of my comfort zone, it's not in my wheelhouse necessarily, or it's pushing me on my schedule and other things and other responsibilities that I have. Let's not just get distracted by running the day-to-day of our households or our businesses or our careers. Let's refuse to stay in our comfort zone when we're raising our children. Let's keep meeting their needs and keep doing the good and hard work that it takes to raise children in a time such as this. There's no one like you to do the job. You know them the best. And keep searching over your child's life. And so for those of you who are not graduating today and you're not a parent of children kind of going up in the child rearing process, I have a question for you. Because you interact with our children here in this community a great deal. How are you looking at our children? Do you see them as being human? I know I'm still learning a lot of things, and children are really still learning a lot of things. We don't always make the right choices, even as grown-ups, and children especially don't. So I want to encourage you to look at our children in this community with gentle, encouraging eyes. They need it a lot. I'm going to turn it back over to Pastor John.
Thank you, Candace. So one of the cool things about the Bible, as you read it, you get new insight into it. And so when we first planned this whole sermon out, like I thought, oh, yeah, I know that passage. I know where it's going. And then I started reading it, and I was like, oh, And this one thing really stuck out at me really, really strongly. And that was when Jesus says, and I'll read it directly to you. His parents say, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you. He says, why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? And like I run the junior high program. So I have the 12-year-olds all the time, right? And the way that they hear would say, you know, didn't you know, is not the way Jesus probably said it. They would be like, didn't you know that I would be here? Jesus is not acting like that. He's not being snotty. He's just saying, like, well, like, you know, the angels came and told you I'm the Son of God. Like, there's some indications that I would be here. Just saying. But like that statement, didn't you know? I don't know if you know people that are like know-it-all kind of people, like they just know everything and they have an opinion on everything and they have a statement about everything and they constantly are just saying it out loud. I'm sure that I am that person to someone because like Eric McClanahan says, like everybody is the villain in someone else's story. But like there are definitely some people in my life that are know-it-alls that I don't really get along with because they just... they exhaust me. I went to a wedding with one of them, and well, two of them really, and we drove, and the whole drive, they were just arguing over how right they were, and I was like in the back, just like, it's exhausting, right? I don't know very many things, I think. I do know that sometimes I have amazing insights, and I actually have psychic powers. I don't know if you knew this. My brain like will swell up and like glow when I'm reading someone's mind, and usually it's when I'm reading their mind because they have a weird look on their face, and I'm psychically knowing that they hate me. That is my special power. I can know based on what you are presenting to me that you hate me or you're mad at me. And I know that's what I know. It's what I know. I don't know a lot. So when Jesus is like, didn't you know? I'd be like, I didn't. But I do know those things. Like if you look at me and you're like, hey, John, I know I did something wrong and you're mad at me and you hate me now. Dave, you're supposed to quote like famous theologians. So I'm gonna quote Dave. He says this, we think a lot of things, but we don't know a lot of things. We think a lot of things. We think we know a lot of things. We don't actually know a lot of things. My wife's birthday was last week, last Friday. And last Friday, we also were celebrating our junior high kids graduating from middle school and going up into high school, and so we had to take them out on a big adventure, and we went down to Irvine, went to Boomer's, and mini golf, and midnight bowling, and all this stuff, which is exactly what you want to do on your birthday, right? My wife was thrilled that the date lined up like that. She was so excited. Yes, we get to ride in a bus? All right. We get to celebrate my birthday with junior high kids. All right, yes. And so we also had like a dance recital the next day. We had all this crazy stuff going on, and she was like so worried that like her friends were gonna forget her birthday because we were so busy, like we couldn't even keep our regular schedule straight. And sure enough, her best friend forgot her birthday. We're riding back in the bus. It's like midnight, it's smelly, it's gross. There's junior high kids like screaming all around us, and she's crying because her best friend forgot her birthday. And that's an awful feeling. We go to bed and she's just like, it was awful. And I don't have any good words for that. Like, I'm sorry, like, get a better friend. But it turns out she knew she was forgotten, she knew it. Turns out in the morning, she looked at her phone and there was a whole different app that had a notification on it that she hadn't seen. And it was a whole video happy birthday thing from her best friend that was sent the morning before, waiting for her the whole day that she didn't see it. She knew she had been forgotten, but she wasn't. She wasn't forgotten. And I think about that. Like, these are the people that were handpicked to raise Jesus. They should know he should be in his Father's house. They should know that he needs to be growing and learning and hearing about God. And they didn't know it. How much more do I, just looking at your face, staring at me because you're bored, know that you hate me, right? It doesn't make any sense. But I do that all the time. And you guys in school, your teachers are going to be bored or mad or annoyed or hungry or tired or even annoyed at you, but not always. Don't just automatically assume that they hate you. Don't go there. Give them some grace. It's what we would want for other people to do to us. If somebody just walked up to us and said, "Why do you hate me?" We wouldn't, what? I don't, unless you do. I don't hate you. Like, you know, we would want that grace. How do you give that grace to people? There's a couple ways that you can do it. You can just get out of your own head and go serve somewhere else. There's plenty of places. I mean, look at this craziness that we did this week. There's lots of places here to serve. There's lots of things to do. And when you're serving someone else, you don't have a lot of time to look at people's faces and go, "Well, their eyebrow is a little, oh yeah, they hate me." You don't have time for that, right? The other thing is you can stop writing this narrative that everybody hates you. Chapter 4. Colton's looking at his iPad, obviously hates me. You can stop writing that. And you can just write, you can be in what God is writing, the narrative that God is writing for us. The next thing, Jesus goes and he's obedient. He leaves with his parents and he's obedient. We can just be obedient to God. But the most important thing, I think, is what Colton's going to talk about next. Be in the Father's house.
Thanks, John. So good. So good. So good. So what do we do when we're feeling lost? We go to the Father's house. We stay in the Father's house. Even if we're feeling lost. Jesus was lost. Or at least his parents thought he was. But he was actually learning and growing and even teaching. And his formation was beginning that would ultimately take him to 33 years old when he would die on the cross for the sins of the world to the Messiah. So was Jesus actually lost in the temple with his father? No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He was right where he needed to be. So today, for graduates, for all of us, church, can we get lost in the Father's house? When we struggle, when we wrestle with things, when we're asking questions, when we have doubts, all those things happen. It's part of life. Can we do that in the Father's house, connected to God and having the Spirit around us with common believers who can encourage and lift us up. Because we will have moments when we're struggling, but instead of going to the distant country, can we wrestle in the Father's house? And so for graduates, I just want to encourage you, follow Jesus in this next stage of life. Seek him out. Find a good church wherever you're going. Find a good community. Maybe reach out and find a mentor. Those things are very important. And they will shape you as you become the man or woman that God wants you to become. And wrestle, and all of us, church, can we wrestle in the Father's house? And I'm not just talking about church. That's absolutely part of it. But what's our devotional life like? What's our scriptural reading? Do we have any kind of prayer life? Can we be connected to the Father even when we're struggling? Can we run towards him when we are fearful and broken and not run away from him? Can we wrestle in the Father's house? And a beautiful thing about this story in Luke 2 is that Jesus' parents, similarly to John's mom in the first story, right, and Candace in her story, Jesus' parents will not stop searching for Jesus. They won't stop, no matter what. We're given a time period, right? 3 days, which is a crazy long time. But if the time was longer, they still wouldn't have stopped. And the beauty about this church is that's how God is with us. He will not stop seeking and searching after us. Whether we're in the distant country or wherever we are, he will not stop with his prevenient grace and love pursuing us all the days of our lives. We have a choice, a free will choice to turn to him, to go to the Father's house. But the most truest thing ever is that he will not stop searching for you. And so young people, as you graduate, as you jump into the next phase, I'm praying that you're thinking about that. Candace.
Thank you, Colton, for those important truths. One's for my husband. I didn't get to say Happy Father's Day to him before I had to leave today. He was still sleeping. So parenting is a lot like the elevator and escalator business. There's a lot of ups and downs. From the moment that you first meet your child, hopefully he's not laughing. Oh, okay. From the moment you first meet your child, the depth of love that you once knew expands in a way that you never imagined you could love. And this beautiful moment is to be treasured. Then before you know it, you're changing diapers in the most creative places you would have ever known. You're trying to put a very gentle lid on this rising autonomy that has come into your home and into your life. You're dropping everything when sickness calls. Your expectations and your disappointments might pile up. Milestones are met, friendships are made. Seeing through things through your children's eyes becomes like a real thing and a real excitement too. Our minds tend to remember the challenging parts of our lives. They remember it so well it can turn into negativity and being disgruntled, and then bitterness takes root. There are many neurological studies about this. And these things will rob us from the parenting life that God has planned for us, for our families, and for our children's lives. We really have to learn how to savor the joy. And this looks different for everyone because we're all not the same, right? And Mary was a great example of this in this passage. Not only did she treasure the moment after Jesus was born, after a crazy birth situation in a manger, but she did it here after she found him in her father's house. In a moment where he was at, where his passions were, she treasured that moment. And so I want to encourage you to savor these moments too as parents. And what does it look like? Maybe it's a photo album on your phone. Maybe it's a wallpaper or a background on your phone of the latest moment. Maybe you like to journal or scrapbook. Maybe you don't have time for that, so voice memos might work, like remember this. Maybe you like to make videos. Sometimes your phones can do that for you too. Maybe you like to talk to people, share things, tell a friend, a family member, even a stranger. It helps restore that happy moment back to your brain. You can make a blog. You could make a calendar of all the happy moments. You could capture it with art or paint. You could plant something in your garden to take the memory and commemorate it. You could just write a little bullet point on your phone, just something to savor and treasure the moment needs to be done. Whatever it is to be most, to maximize your joy. At this time, I'd like to invite the worship band to come forward. We're gonna close out in a prayer for all of us and the grads. Heavenly Father, will you just bless all of our graduates today with bravery that can only come from you, to know that they are uniquely and wonderfully made. Will you bless our parents to continue to search for their children and to find new and refreshing ways to restore joy to their minds. We lift up our whole community here, that everyone would be able to make this a safe place and an encouraging place with joy and constant renewal and return as we seek our eyes on you, Lord. Will you be with us today, this Father's Day, those hurting and those in need? And we all said together, amen. Will you join me in standing in worship this last song?
Thanks for joining us at the Montrose Church Podcast. For more information, please visit us at www.montrosechurch.org. Have a great day.